along to this week's edition of the Irish Golfer Podcast. Peter Finnan here, and we've quite the crew on this week. So we've the usual two ball of Ronan McNamara. How are you, Ronan?
How are you all?
Mark McGowan over in Sligo.
Good evening.
And delighted to be joined as well by Gary Murphy. How are you, Gary?
Very well. Good evening, lads. Hope you're all well.
No, all good. So before we get kicking on, Gary's obviously a brand ambassador for Flowgas, who are sponsoring the pod, sponsoring pretty much every level of Irish golf, right from Golf Ireland championships and competitions, right up to our new touring professionals and stuff like that. So supporting golf right across the spectrum. So visit flowgas.ie to have a look at all their specials and what they've going on. But this is a big week here doing this pod live from the Masters Media Centre. So nice little, it's something new, something different. They haven't done this before. They haven't provided rooms like this at Augusta National before. So they've recording studios here now. Nice little backgrounds and loads going on. But yeah, we've loads to digest and get into. So I'm sure your news feeds have all been clogged up all week with Masters previews. But let's get stuck in and see what we can come up with. So you've been here a number of times, Gary. Anyway, you've played here before. You went to college here in the 90s. So you're well familiar with the place.
I am, yeah. I was lucky. I went out there on a golf scholarship. We'll say in the 90s. It's a bit broader, a bit easier on my age. But it's a special week. I think it's a week where it's probably something we've tried to do with the Irish Open the last few years, where you include the community. You know, and I think Lahinch probably, you know, famously did it back in 2019. So there's a real buy-in from the locality, and everyone wants to be part of the week. You can rent your house out tax-free for the week. I think it was President Eisenhower brought that law in. So, and then obviously the global reach of the tournament, the fact that it's the first major of the year. It's just a special place. I was fortunate to live there for a few years and got to play the course once. Granted, in a hurricane, which took a little bit of the gloss off it, but I'm not complaining. It's I was 19 at the time. I wish it'd been about 39 or 49. You'd probably appreciate it a bit more, but it's considering the winter we have, it's just exciting that this kind of feels like the start of the golf season for everyone who plays the game. So it's a special week in many fronts.
Yeah. Now you're talking about hurricanes there. Weather's going to have a massive impact on this this week. Like it's there's really bad weather forecast for the Thursday. So tomorrow, depending on what time you're listening to this, and it looks as though they haven't made any announcements here yet, but it looks as though they're going to postpone everything to like 12 noon, 1 o'clock at a minimum tomorrow. And there's talk of even not letting people onto the property, patrons onto the property for a certain amount of time, if even at all. So there's a big thunderstorm coming across here tomorrow, and they've kind of been doing all the weather projections and what's going on. So there's definitely going to be a lot of disruption tomorrow. But once they get the first day out of the way, Friday, Saturday, Sunday is like 25 to 30 degrees, clear, sunny. So it's going to it's going to favor the late starters. Rory and Shane have kind of, well, Rory's more mid-morning over here, and Shane has a later tea time. So yeah, I think it's gonna favor the later starters that might get 36 holes done in really calm conditions compared to someone having to go out if they do let people out tomorrow battening down the hatches for a few holes. So
yeah, it sounds like the type of week where you can lose it on the first day, but you know you can't necessarily win it. So it's kind of all going to be about hanging in there for those who do get started on Thursday morning.
No, absolutely. Like going through, like the press conferences yesterday were easy. I'm sure you've picked up on all the stuff from them, like all across. They've been covered in depth. But like, I don't know, did you see the press conferences yesterday, Gary, or did you digest much of it? Or
yeah, I think obviously Rory's very short and he was very coy. He's arrived late, which you kind of like. My only experiences of playing in majors were, I was kind of fortunate. I played practice rounds with, you know, Harrington and Darren Clark and Paul McGinley, and Harrington and Clark were kind of two of the favourites for the tournament. And I was astonished at how much more detail they had in practice than they would, let's say, if we'd been playing in, you know, the German Masters or something. And I couldn't understand that. And I think a lot of people have made that mistake over the years for major championships. I really liked Wyndham Clark yesterday. He was saying that he's just trying to treat it like another tournament. He arrived Monday night. He arrives every Monday night for a tournament and does the thing on a Tuesday and gets going. So it's, and that's been Rory's biggest thing over the years. You know, there's so much history on the line with the Grand Slam. Golf is a very precarious sport and creates a ferocious amount of anxiety. And a lot of guys make the common mistake that they over-prepare. Scottie Scheffler has obviously been there earlier because of the drive, pitch and putt thing. But he seems quite a chilled out soul, so I don't think that'll affect him too much. But I like the way Rory has gone at it. I think last week was very important for him, just for his own head. I don't think the external pressure this week is going to play in as much as it has in the past. It might, you know, if he gets off to a fast start and he's in the mix, you know, from early on, that creates a life of its own. But I think they all have different ways of doing it. The big challenge is for the first timers, and I think Åberg was sensational in his prep, certainly through the press conference, that, you know, he's leaning heavily on his caddy and he's not trying to do anything too differently. So
yeah,
some of them seem to be getting wise to the fact, but it's just hard because it's so exciting your first time. You just want to get there and soak it all in. But, you know, our coach and college always had this thing where, you know, if you got in the Masters as, you know, would you wait around? If you were got in the Masters as an amateur, would you wait around before turning pro until you played that? And he thought that you shouldn't. You know, it's your opportunity to play if you don't think you can play as a pro. But a lot of them make the mistake. They put too much emphasis on it. So I think they should all feel like it's a regular event. And Clark put it perfectly that, you know, he's beaten all these guys before, so he doesn't have to do anything crazy different to do the same thing again.
It's hard to believe Wyndham Clark's a rookie coming into this. Yeah. I didn't actually know that until I'd seen his press conference yesterday. Now, the one thing I'll pull him up on is his attire this week. His shirt yesterday was horrendous, and he wore another thing today. It was the same. So we'll leave that to one side. We'll park his dress since he got dressed in the dark yesterday. But no, I'd agree with you on Rory. Like, he's tried everything. He's tried every way of preparing for this tournament, going early, playing whatever, 10 rounds in the lead up and playing with members and doing stuff to literally taking himself away. And it really struck me last week when I just think last week was the perfect prep week for him, the way he needed to prepare, the way he went about it. It's like he just went there to play super cautious golf, be as patient as possible, not really take on and get himself into that mindset and see where, like, it was kind of an irrelevance of a golf tournament. It was just reps under a certain mindset, and to finish third in third gear, pretty much, like, he didn't really have to do too much to get himself there or thereabouts. I think he'll take so much from that, and especially the birdies were always there for Rory. It was just getting rid of those doubles and bad mistakes, and he did that last week. You know, he put in a lot of solid rounds, solid reps. And yeah, he there's a different vibe about him this week. Like, I've been here and covered a lot of these while he's... The buzz isn't all about Rory McIlroy over here for this tournament. Even his press conference yesterday, like, there was more people at Scottie Scheffler's than there was Rory's. And that's different than have been at other tournaments like this. There's a lot of focus on Scottie. Tiger's obviously taking his headlines, but Rory's nearly semi under the radar coming into this. And like, he did 7 questions in 10 minutes yesterday. That is it. It was the most abrupt ending to a press conference. He came early, did his few questions. Like, there was people walking in. He was 2 minutes in and the room still wasn't full and people didn't even know.
That's why there were so few people at the press conference. They were all still arriving in and he was leaving. But
no, honestly, they just sprung it on and that was it. So yeah, it's a very interesting one. But I that piece that I put out today is all about, I just think it's all about the start with Rory. Like, his playing with Scottie Scheffler, we'll get into that. Is that a good thing? Is that a positive or a negative? But it's all about the start. And in his 15 previous Masters attempts, he's only posted in the 60s twice in round one. And like, even yesterday before Tiger's presser, one of the guys doing the interviews were going through about, like, how important it is to be in the top 10 after round one. Only twice in the last 20 years someone hasn't been in the top 10 and won, and they were both Tiger wins. So it's just imperative that he gets off to a good start. So I don't know what you think, lads. Like the four ball or the three ball that he's out in, do you think it's a good thing or a bad thing for him?
I don't think it's the worst thing in the world. Like, Scheffler is probably the most patient player you could ever come across. So I think looking across the fairway and maybe looking at what he's doing won't do him any harm. Scheffler is obviously the overwhelming favourite, and McIlroy was guilty of getting caught chasing too early last year, but it looks like he's learned that lesson. So I don't think that's going to have that hindering effect. You spoke about his press conference, Peter. Like, there's a real sense of just strictly business this week. No distractions, no live questions, no questions about, you know, the Grand Slam and why haven't you completed yet? Why haven't you won a major in 10 years? But yet in that patience, there's still that sense of urgency, you know, which is why he started early and he got out of the press conference after 7 minutes. It looks like he feels like, I'm ready to go out there and, you know, do the business this week. My only hope is that the forecast and his side of the draw doesn't go against him with the side of the draw he's been given.
I think there's a couple of different ways you can look at that press conference stuff as well, though, because, I mean, last year he talked for, must have been like 35, nearly 40 minutes, and he looked, you know, he was relaxed. He was sitting up there just kind of answering questions on this, that, and the other. And you could have said him walking out of that press conference, oh, he's so relaxed, he's so in tune, you know, he's a man comfortable with everything. And then he goes out and does a 72, 75 and misses the cut. It's kind of one of these things where how he plays is going to determine whether everybody's going to then say, oh, it was the right approach or it was the wrong approach. He's probably tried every different approach to the Masters at this point. As we said, he's played like a heavy schedule, he's played a light schedule. He's come in like loads of practice rounds. He's had next to no practice rounds. Like, at this stage, it's just a case of he has to go out there and do it on the course. You know, forget about everything else. That's it, really.
What are your thoughts? If I was to just go around the table now and say just a simple yes, no, is Rory McIlroy going to win this week? Like, it's just like everyone will give, it's obviously simplifying it a bit much, but I think he will. If I'm going to start it off, I actually think he will. I think he's doing all the right things, and if he gets off to a right start, I'd be well in the Tiger camp of his press conference yesterday that he's too good not to, and it's just a case of, is this the week? And I just have a feeling that it is.
I'd have a lot of faith in him if he can get to the back nine on Sunday with a genuine chance. You know, I don't think I'd be as fearful as I might have been in the past. I think his biggest battle is to try to get onto that 10th tee within a couple of the lead. That's going to be the challenge for him. I think he's been so candid in previous press conferences and throughout his career as well. And more often than not, you know, he's had stints on and off social media and that. So I reckon, you know, because Sean, his manager, is quite a clever individual, as much as, you know, as everything else. But and that noise of being too candid has obviously affected him, because his challenge this week is to be as calm and focused as he can come Thursday morning. So I think the noise in the past has obviously affected him. And now, you know, he has tried everything, but, you know, apart from turning up next year and playing left-handed if he doesn't win, like, he's literally tried everything. So I think his biggest challenge is to get into contention on the 10th tee Sunday night. Yeah. And I think he'll enjoy that moment. He might find a sense of relief in that moment and not push as much as he has done in the past, because he's got to use his experience. His golfing game is undoubtedly good enough to win. It's just sometimes these great players get in their own way. Now, the great ones, and he will be a great, great one if he wins Sunday night, because he'll have won the Grand Slam. But my only worry is his bogey count. He's got to keep his bogey count at least in single figures to have a chance for winning. That's the difference between him and Scheffler at the moment. While Scheffler is producing serious numbers, he makes very few mistakes. So, and you made a great point there, Peter, about, you know, the way he kind of plotted his way around last week. And that's a good way to prep. It's a very hard thing. We can't do it because we're not good enough to shoot away for flags. So we have to shoot at flags the whole time and hope, you know, we get somewhere close. But I don't want them to be too cautious either. You know, there's a lot of instinct in that game too. And it's just trying to find that balance. The reality is the par fives are where he can do all his damage. I'd like to see him play those aggressively. And maybe on those, you know, three or four particularly difficult par fours and three or four difficult par threes, maybe use that strategy there, but certainly attack when it's in his wheelhouse to attack.
Yeah, it's the overhaul, like even what I said there about his first 50, like it's the start. Yeah, he turns a lot of hay on the par fives, but like he in his 54 rounds that he's played around Augusta in competition, he's plus 12 for the first hole, and he always bounces back in the second, like he's 20 under cumulative for that hole. But if he gets four pars on the first or better this week, four pars to get started off, I just think it is such a big statement if he can just go out and par the first every day, and because he will then be under par through two, all being equal and the way he plays. It'll be interesting. The length, it's an interesting hole, actually, a second as well. I'm not sure if you've seen that on TV. Like they have added a little bit of length to that, and they've pushed the tee box back, I think it's 10 or 12 yards. But we'll get into Shane now in a minute. But Shane was actually made a comment that he was here last Monday playing a practice round and didn't play with Rory. They were both here the same day. But he said that he was asking Rory specifically about the second, can you take it over that bunker? And Rory was like, yeah, it's about 315 carry. I can actually take it over. Shane actually can't. Said he's going to probably be a bit conservative, depending on the wind, going to lay back short of the bunker and probably take his chances with 5 wood down into it. Whereas Rory can, if he can carry that bunker, it's going to catch the downslope. You're left a 6 or 7 iron in, like it depends on. It's crazy, like the difference in that sort of 10, 15 yards, what it actually makes to separate.
It's not a good change because it's narrowing the field, or it's widening the field rather than narrowing it, really, which is a bit unfair.
Yeah, I never thought of it like that, but yeah, no, it is. It's really putting an emphasis on carry distance off that, and like obviously the further out you can get it, if you can get it beyond that bunker, you're kicking it downslope and it's getting you another 50 yards down the hill. So yeah, never looked at it like that. But no, Shane was quite like he has his own routines that he said that he does the same thing. He's split into two houses this year. He's his own house with his own family with Wendy and the kids, and then he has everyone else in another house. He's just sort of made the analogy that like when it comes, if I am there in contention or if things do fall into place or do fall right, like the last thing you want on a Friday is to be talking lads talk about green jackets and stuff like that. So I just want to do my own thing in my own time and chill out. But no, he was very open and honest in his press conference, like saying not his press conference. We kind of did a huddle with him earlier in the week, but he was, he was just very relaxed about it. He said he's kind of worked the place out. He's a lot more comfortable coming here, which is surprising to hear from someone that has been here a lot, like and played with Tiger here and played with some of the best players in the world here and has familiarized himself. And even after a third place finish a couple of years ago, still had that bit of, you know, just uncertainty about coming in and how comfortable he was. But he seems really witted and really, he's just very eager to get started by the sounds of him. He's keen just to get started and he's very, very comfortable where he's at with his game. Like, it's been done to death on the importance here of strokes gained approach on this golf course, of how your proximity to the hole stats really add up. And like, you'd struggle to find a better iron player out here than Shane with his approaches. But if he clicks this week, he's definitely on my short list for a bet anyway.
Yeah, I mean, he's a great iron player. He's also a great shot maker as well. Like, so obviously with so many uneven lies, ball above your feet, ball below your feet, you have to play a draw on this hole. You have to play a fade on this hole. Like those, he's got all of those in his wheelhouse. A lot of guys are, you know, it's like the TrackMan golf or range golf. They're fantastic at hitting a straight shot, but whenever they have to work at a certain direction, you know, that's, they're maybe just not quite as comfortable. Whereas we've seen like all the way down through the years. Like, Shane is very comfortable in that scenario, and it's no surprise that he's got a good record around here, that he's come reasonably close before, and that he feels ready to step up and you know, put in a real big performance.
Yeah, I think, you know, he's done well. He's only one of what, three players the last 4 years with top 25s, and Scheffler and Matsuyama, two former champions, you know, and two of the main contenders. So he's in great company. I'm just a little worried about his schedule coming into it. You know, he went to Singapore and he's had a 2 week break.
Yeah.
Now, granted, he did very well. He did very well the two events in Florida prior to that. I think he did a lot better probably at Sawgrass than he did at West Palm Beach. That was kind of a bad fourth, if there's such a thing. I'm surprised a bit at his schedule to go over and go to Singapore and then have a 2 week break. So I just hope that he can have a little bit of fear tomorrow going out, and that'll sharpen the mind. I don't want him too relaxed. I think he's a better player when he's a bit on edge and a bit angry and a bit tetchy. I think he gets a bit more aggressive when he's like that. So if he can turn up, you know, sharp and ready to go, as you were saying, a strokes gained approach is a huge advantage around here, and why he's done well in the past. The big thing I always find with Lowry is if he can get comfortable speed wise in the greens. He's a wonderful putter when he's on and gets comfortable with the pace. I think he puts better on faster greens. You know, so there's a lot to like about Shane. It's just a big step up again. But he does have a habit of you know, winning massive events after a gap of wins. Now, I think Wentworth is a massive event, but, you know, it's 5 years since he won a Portrush. So by those stats, I know Harrington loves these certain stats about who can and cannot win majors. But, you know, for that, I think Larry he's a live chance. I just hope he's a bit edgy and nervous tomorrow. And that might sharpen his mind.
Yeah, he actually remarked on that on the scheduling and coming in here, and like he spoke about this being his most favorite week of the year, obviously, and looking forward to getting going. But he said his second favorite week of the year, it was actually the week before the Masters, that he gets to go and grind and do that. So he said he kind of did that on purpose, and he said he just loved the grind of getting back into it and getting prepped for this place. He came here for 2 days the week before and got his reps in that way. And yeah, he on the greens thing as well, he said even down, like he mentioned specifically the Grove down in Florida where he's a member. I know he's a member in the Bears Club as well. He said they got the green speeds up to like 14 last week, and he spent a lot of time playing like downhill on fast greens and pace control and doing a lot of putting the reps in and that. So yeah, I think he's kind of looked at it in that sense. I do agree. I just think Singapore was a massive... We called it out here as well, saying that it was a mad move to make. He'd done it for his own reasons, and it just seemed like a waste of a journey for him at that specific time of the year. But yeah, he seems to have done the donkey work last week, and he's in a good spot. So he was saying all the right things anyway about his prep last week. So yeah, I think that's good. What do you think, Mark? You were looking to get in there.
I was. Well, Gary was saying he plays better when he's a little bit tetchy, when he's a little bit angry. So you could do the people's work and go out and start heckling him from outside the ropes and get him riled up.
I don't want to get Shane going again. He's cut me down a few times in press conferences for saying the wrong thing at the wrong time.
That's exactly why you're the right man to do it.
No. I just think he's a good... Like, he was talking... Even 2 years ago, when I was here 2 years ago and he came off, and he was nearly disappointed with finishing third in a major at the Masters and stuff like that. And he was actually asked about that. I think it was Greg Allen just quizzed him up and saying, I'll never forget how disappointed you were in 2022. And the answer he gave was really good. He said, yeah, like, no one remembers who finished third in the Masters. You do, because you're here to cover Irish golf and you're here to cover me. But Like, and he said, finishing third, that won't get me back through the gate in 20 years' time. I want to come through that gate in 20 years' time as a Masters champion. And he actually was drawn on talking about, like, how important it would be to him, or he's actually thought about, like, no Irishman winning a green jacket and gone down that route a little bit. Like, it's dangerous mindset to be getting into before a tournament like this. But he's addressed it all, and he seems quite comfortable. And I'd be quite bullish on Lowry this week. I know we're just singling out two Irish lads to do it, but they're two lads that are at the peak of their powers and look to be in a good space coming into this.
Yeah, I like Lowry's chances personally myself. Like he's a ball striking machine. Like he ranked in the top 20 in strokes gained approach in his last four Masters appearances. He was second and seventh at the Cognizant Classic and the Palmer Invitational at Bay Hill for strokes gained approach. And those were 2 weeks he contended to win, having, you know, modest enough putting performances. Like I think he was 21st and 27th in strokes gained putting in both of those weeks. So like he only needs to put decently to, I think, put himself in contention this week. I do think he has a chance. He's a great short game. It's just for Shane, it's about making sure he's rock solid on the short putts. Like they're his Achilles heel. Can he get enough of those four footers, especially the ones that are downhill? Can he get enough of those to keep the momentum going, keep himself in the tournament? Because I think that's the difference between, you know, finishing the top 20 comfortably and maybe contending to win over the weekend.
Yeah. Just leave himself below the hole. It'd be grand. Problem solved. Done.
Yeah.
You can box them up, box them in.
I think he has to putt very well to win. I think he can putt okay and have a good week. And as he said, you know, third would be a great finish. You know, if he's going to go for that added pressure of just wanting to win, he has to play a lot more aggressively, I think.
Yeah, he likes to chase, doesn't he?
He what?
He likes to chase. That's what I always get from Shane. Like a challenge like this, he likes the strategy of the game. You know, unlike, like, I'm not saying Rory doesn't, but like you compare them to, like, they'll both stripe the ball. They're both really good ball strikers. But in around the greens, like when Lowry misses greens, he likes the challenge of that. You just don't get level lies around this golf course. You're uphill, you're downhill, you're sidehill. Rory's a great player in autopilot when he sees something straight away, where Shane is more, I don't know, he's more deliberate about his approach. He seems to have just a better shot selection sometimes under the gun and stuff like that. He just seems to be, he really enjoys the chase in these big spotlight tournaments.
Are you saying that Shane's a better player than Rory?
No, I did not say that. I don't know what you heard there, Gary. No, but there's just, yeah, I think the two lads are going to be up there. I really do.
I think the, you know, because you got to look at it as, and I would say a lot of them are looking at it, if I can finish ahead of Scheffler, I've got a chance of putting a new coat on Sunday night. So Lowry played with Scheffler the final round at the Arnold Palmer, you know, which was a brutal test. It was a really difficult day. Now, unfortunately, he shot himself in the foot early on in the final round, a bit like he did when he finished third at Augusta with that triple on four. So, and they're the learnings hopefully he's going to make. No different to McIlroy. I think he has to keep the, not so much the big numbers because he doesn't make a lot of them, but he has to keep the kind of silly stuff off his card. You know, even so, because Scheffler is so good and whoever's leading on Saturday night is going to be playing so well. It's a very difficult course to chase on. So, you know, that early one over after three, two over after four stuff, he can't. I think he does need the stars align for Lowry to win. His long game and his mid-iron play will get him in there. It's just the little difference that could make the big difference. So not letting the occasion get to him early doors and then just fighting back, because he's great at that. Just to keep it as clean as he possibly can, because we know he's good enough. Like if he can win around Portrush, you know, with all that expectation, and he's performed well around here, it's just the room margin for error is so tiny when you have the best player in the world by a stretch, and you're just going to get two or three guys that are having a week. And hopefully he can be one of those and just keep it as tight as possible.
I know you like doing a few tips or looking at a few players. Are you looking at anyone else, or who in particular are you looking at this week for a few quid, Gary?
I'm absolutely fascinated to see how Ludvig Åberg is going to do. I'm not saying he's the second coming of Christ, but his numbers are a bit spooky. And I think Wyndham Clark has turned into a huge, big-time player. As you were saying earlier, you know, to be a rookie coming in with the US Open in the boot of the car is different. His press conference yesterday just seemed very mature. I'm not saying Åberg is going to win. I can't see him out of the top 10 if he turns up and plays his game. The golf course is literally tailor-made for him. He is the master in strokes gains approach. He's improved his short game. Now, we don't know what he's improved it from because he's only been a pro for 20 minutes, but just the way he handled himself at the Ryder Cup last year, he's won on both sides of the pond. He's not even a pro 12 months. I know we're crying out for, you know, a new sensation. Tiger Woods' story is kind of coming to an end. I'm not saying he's going to win. I can't see him not being in the mix if he plays his game around here. I think he's fascinating. And he's even money at a top 20 market, which is free money if he plays, really.
Buying money. This is not betting advice, anybody, but yeah, buying money. I actually had Åberg on a shortlist as well. I have him, Will Zalatoris. I just think is, you know, since he's come back from injury, he showed signs. He always seems to produce something. Again, he's only been a pro, like you said, for a couple of years, but he seems to like this place a lot. And I do have Lowry and McIlroy down for the Irish bets as well. But have you lads got any punts on, lads?
No, I've got a ton on. against my better judgment, I tell myself every year I'm not going to. But I did stick a few quid on McIlroy earlier on. Have a few on Lowry already as well. A couple of outside ones went for another Augusta favorite of mine, Russell Henley. I've been backing him every single year for. He always seems to play well here, and apart from last year is the only year that he sort of didn't like throw it all away or throw away his each way chances on the final round. So got him at about 250-1 last year. He's a lot shorter this year, unfortunately, but still had to stick a few quid on him. And I've actually put a few quid on Cantlay as well. This is kind of one where I'll be, it's almost like an insurance bet. I desperately don't want Cantlay to win the Masters, but if he does, at least it kind of pays out for me a little bit. But he's
the 33-1 will soften the blow.
Strangely, like for somebody who's like a really good putter, he's never really putted well around Augusta. He's got himself well into the tournament at times. I mean, back in 2019, when Tiger won for a little while, it looked as though he was going to be the party pooper, and everybody was, well, I was going to hate him more than I ever did before. But yeah, even those years that he's given himself a chance, he hasn't particularly putted well. So I kind of feel with somebody who's as good a putter as him, that can't continue. He's going to have to put well here at some stage. So that could well be this year.
I think Cam Smith is massively overpriced as well.
Yeah.
Like if Cam Smith was on the PGA Tour, he'd be, what would he be, 16, 18 to 1 at a stretch?
Yeah.
And he's in the 60s. So I think he just had food poisoning last week. I think he's back to full health. So he's a great putter. He won't be afraid. Like, you got to be looking at someone who's not going to be afraid to win it. That's the number one thing. This tournament means way more to them than anything they've played in up to date this season. So it's the added pressure. How do they cope with that demand? They all, you know, I'm not saying they turn up at tournaments and don't want to win, but, you know, they all really, really, really want to win this tournament. So you got to pick someone who's going to. That's why Matsuyama is also exciting for me. I think he wouldn't be afraid of it either.
There's so many. Brooks as well. Brooks sticks out to me like a sore thumb as well, of someone that just ticks that box of there's no fear in him. You know, he's a bit of a chip in the shoulder over not getting the job done in final round last year as well. And like, he's obviously kicked on and won a major since then as well. So like, there's so many of them in such great mindsets coming in here. But yeah, like, there's a lot to be said. Like, some people look at it, and even in John Rahm's presser yesterday when he was being quizzed up about it, about lack of reps, lack of golf, and he was saying, like, you're talking about this like it's a bad thing. Like, I think less golf for me was actually better than what I was doing, and I've played less coming in here. I still have the competitive reps, the juices are still flowing, and I think I can still get it done, you know. He was, all the live guys are overpriced.
Like, sometimes there has to be a body of work as well. He's only played, what, 9 rounds of golf for the Cardinals bucket?
Yeah.
You know, now he is the most under-the-radar defending champion since, you know, whoever the last one was that had no chance of repeating it. Whoever that might be, maybe Mike Weir.
He was the first one that came to my mind as well.
You know, or someone like that, but...
Danny Willett.
Yeah, Danny Willett, you know, and it's great to see Danny Willett back, actually. I didn't realise how much trouble he's had injury-wise. So Danny's actually one of the good guys. He's a big Liverpool fan like myself, so we've got to stick together. But yeah, I think Rahm is fascinating. And he's that kind of guy. He's not afraid of it. So I think the big key for him is, well, this sounds a bit stupid considering he four-putted the first last year, but I think, you know, a good start. With, like, that's an example there that, you know, he immediately just went chasing it after it. So I think Rahm's start, his first round, if he's in the 60s, if the weather is going to be, you know, reasonable, it's going to be crucial for him, because then he'll just be back into John Rahm mode on the PGA Tour, and that's quite an exciting prospect for John Rahm fans.
Rahm said that if you can get to the seventh hole level par, then you're really well. You've made a really good start to the tournament. And I mean, even though, yeah, he did four putt that first hole last year, he did manage to get back to level par through seven. I think he said so. He said at that point he was comfortable. He knew that he'd made a good start regardless, even if he'd absolutely butchered the first hole.
Right, Ronan, tippage. Come on.
Finally. Been trying to get in there for the last 5 minutes. I've gone with Matsuyama as well. Just think he's been in great form. Like, I've had my eye on him since he won the Genesis, and he's kind of continued in that streak. Obviously a former winner as well, great iron player, not the best putter in the world, but I'm hoping for 1 week and 1 week only he can turn it on. I've gone for Lowry for similar sentiments, really great ball striker, he can get himself in the mix. Gone for Brian Harman as well. I think he's massively overpriced as the Open champion. Like, if Wyndham Clark's going to be billed as one of the favorites as the US Open champion and a rookie, like, Harman's a decent record around Augusta as well, tied 12th in 2021. You've got the left-hander element. They're probably lengthening the course to the point where it might be too long for him, but if he can hang around after the first couple of days and it gets firm and fast over the weekend, like, he's an excellent iron player, fantastic putter. And yeah, look, he's done well at the Players, which is another golf course you're aiming at, you know, small targets, and Augusta, you'd hit these slopes to, you've hit the correct place on the slope to funnel down towards the pin. So I like that correlation. And then I've just threw a couple of quid at Sepp Straka just as a long shot. Streaky player, like, you never really know what you're going to get from him, but performed well in the Ryder Cup, and I think 150-1. You know, second at the Open last year as well. I think he's worth a couple of quid.
Do you just get a dartboard out, Ronan, and throw it, and just the number that it lands on is the dart, is the number of their caddy, and that's it there. Yeah, Sepp Straka, he'll do. Grand. Number 18 caddy.
Look, I wasn't born when Gary played in Augusta, so I'm just growing with experience here, year by
God,
year.
He's getting digs in there.
Jesus. Got the machine guns out early tonight.
Any other takes from the tournament, lads, that you've noticed or want to go into? Like, it's... Obviously, there's so many storylines.
Peter, I think the first-timers are very interesting. I think there's someone out of that group. You know, we've had, like, Pavon has done really well. He's a supreme ball striker as well. I'm not saying he's going to win the bloody thing, but there's about, I think there's 10 first-timers that are tournament winners, which is unusual. Now, obviously, the amateurs, Lamprecht is interesting as well. You know, see him on the biggest stage. He's got a really good draw playing with Schwartzel. But I mean, you know, there's it's always built about the superstars. And I think we do want a bit of, you know, Scotty and Rory gone down, and a couple of live guys in the mix. But I think there's really good value as well with first timers. Because we've seen it with Aberg when he's turned pro, and a lot of them don't fear it as much as probably happened in the past. They're learning from their own experiences, and you know, even the winner last week in Texas, Bashtai, or whatever, I can never pronounce his name. Like, he's a lefty. He's a phenomenal ball striker. He seems to be putting way better with the, you know, there's good synergy here with left-handers. So, you know, he's a first-timer. I wouldn't rule him out either, so.
Yeah. He was a good press conference, actually. Good storyline with him, like, that he was played the drive chip and put national finals here years ago. He's the first one of that crop to actually come and qualify for the Masters.
Yeah, he's the only kid that's played in that's the same weight as he was when he played it when I was a kid, I think.
Jeez, the machine guns are out, lads. No, it's gas. Yeah, it's just the sheer scale of the place this year. Like, every time you come back here, they just make little subtle tweaks, changes. Interesting to see tomorrow how it holds up with the weather. But yeah, it's just the amount of merchandise. I went down and actually did some merch shopping today. Cleaned out a few credit cards. It's disgraceful when you go in there, the amount of stuff and what you do. Like, I got talking to a guy on the way out, just past the checkouts, like, that was kind of overseeing all these people. And I say, like, what sort of numbers is this turnover? And he goes, yeah, well, the average normally is about 1 million an hour, is what they turn over on tournament days. And he said they're up the first 2 days, they're at $1.2 million per hour in turnover in the shop. It is off the charts. Like, it's just such a well-oiled machine and all this, and like, all, like, everything is branded. Like, I brought in some stuff here, like, you've branded popcorn and crisps, and like, everything is on brand. It's, you know, all the sort of every sandwich under you can think of, and cookie, like, there's just everything, but it's also reasonably priced out there. And I know, like, everybody knows it's the one tournament that I really like coming to, that everybody knows you're not going to get ripped off on the golf course for like F&B. You go to an Ireland match, or like, I went to Ireland, Belgium a couple of weeks ago. It was horrendous, the prices of stuff that you come in. And then you come over here.
How much is it for a coffee, a sandwich, and a bag of crisps over there?
No, you get all that for less than $10.
Wow.
Like, it's crazy. Like, you get, like, $2 will get you a bottle of water and a cookie, or $2 get you a sandwich, $3 get you a sandwich. Like, it's really good. You can understand then why lads are going around drinking electric lemonade all day, just collecting up their cups at like $4 or $5 for the points going around. So no, it's good. It's good. It's going to be a great week. It's going to be serious. But any other takes that you guys have, Ronan, Mark? Ronan?
No, I agree with Gary there on the first-time winner. I think this could be the week where either Wyndham Clark or Ludvig Åberg go quite close. Like, two players of real pedigree there. And you'd nearly have to blink twice when you hear that they're, you know, first timers. Like, Wyndham's obviously a US Open champion, beating everybody before. Åberg, like, just looks like his stock's going to go higher and higher and higher. And like, I couldn't believe it was his first major championship, first Ryder Cup player not to play in a major championship. So I think those two are going to be very interesting to watch. I think they'll be up there, especially Wyndham. He talked a good game yesterday as well. Like, I suppose he needs to do that as well if you're going to dress in the dark like he was. So I'm looking forward to seeing how those two get on. Also, Tiger, like, looks like he's going to have to play 36 holes on the Friday, which doesn't do his chances of making the cut record any good. Very, like, obviously enthused, as I always am, to see how he gets on when he plays. I just hope it's not the usual love-in for 6 or 7 hours, and then by the end he's limping up and down 16, 17, and 18, you know, looking like a real disheveled figure, and we have to go and watch that. I don't like watching him suffering, so I'm hoping if he is out of contention to make the cut come Friday evening, I hope they just maybe don't show him. I think that would be just best for everybody.
And Mark?
Do we think this, if Tiger doesn't make the cut, if he's not physically capable of getting through 36 holes, do we think we'll see Tiger again? Do we think this could be a swan song for him, if, you know, if things don't go his way?
Nah. He spoke well yesterday about the love of the game. He's gone back to his work. Like, he'll play very little this year, but I don't think he'll step away quite yet. He is now. He did go into detail yesterday about Ryder Cup and stuff like that. He didn't get drawn on it, but like in the next 2 weeks, it's looking like he's going to be announced as Ryder Cup captain for Betpage. That might have an impact, obviously, on his playing and what he's doing and what he commits to. But yeah, we're not going to see what he promised at the start of the year or tournament a month, obviously. He just said his game isn't ready for it. If it's not ready now after the break, you know, I can't see it ever being ready for getting back. Like, but you just never know around here. This place is just, like, he came back. He had a lot of reps in 2019, yeah. He didn't have the same injuries, but he's... he knows his way around this place. It was nice to hear him being so positive yesterday, but it'd be interesting to hear.
We haven't really talked about Scheffler either. I mean, considering he's probably the strongest favorite going into a Masters of anybody since Tiger, and there's always tons of correlations between him and Tiger people are making and everything. But just given the way that Scheffler hits the ball and the way he just eats up par fives, that it's, you know, his driving, his approach, his short game, like it's hard to see him not playing like this. Assuming he plays four rounds, it's hard not to see him playing the 16 par fives in probably 11, 12 under. From there, like, he probably only has to pick up six shots across the other 56 holes, and that puts him at 17, 18 under. It's like, can he actually be beaten? If Scheffler plays anywhere near the level he's been playing at, can he be beaten?
Yeah. No, it's an interesting question. Like, he's shown a little bit of human side of it over the last while. Like, he had, like, it's up and down. The putting woes, yeah, he's done well around here, but I just think the putting will catch up with him this week if he's a little off. I think it's wide open. I don't think, like, he's a very short price favorite, but I don't think it's that narrow. He will be thereabouts, like, but I think Rory playing with him is going to be a real positive for both of them to know where they're at, clawing their way through. And I just think historically, when it comes down, push comes to shove, like, Rory has had Scotty's number when they've gone head to head in a lot of tournaments over the last while. I think Rory will enjoy, you know, going shoulder to shoulder, marking him, having a look, keeping an eye, but staying in his own lane, being patient and hoping the long grass suits him this week and just get the job done that way. So no, I'm bullish on Rory.
I think the worry is if Scheffler gets off to a good start, you know, if he's looking very strong after 27, 36 holes, how that can affect the leaderboard. You might see a lot of guys pushing that early that probably don't want to push if they're looking at him, you know, possibly opening up with a couple of 68s in the lead. Guys might start chasing it and blow themselves out of the tournament because, you know, price-wise, it's almost Tiger Woods stuff.
Yeah.
So if we went back 15 years ago when Tiger was fully fit and he's opened up with a couple of 68s, you know, we're all thinking tournament's over. And Scheffler is almost at that level now. So it's how the others react if he does get off to a good start. And the watch with him and McIlroy will be fascinating to see, you know, does Rory maybe get into a match play situation much earlier than he wants to? So
yeah, that's the danger, isn't it?
Yeah, and I think Scheffler's play is going to determine, you know, because there's realistically, I don't know, maybe 15 guys here that, you know, you could throw your hat over them that could win this tournament. But, you know, if someone like Rory shoots 73 to a 68, 67, you know, you might see some blowout rounds, not because they're playing poorly, but they're just pushing too hard. So,
yeah.
And it's that kind of course, you know, and Scheffler can just keep plodding and do as usual, a birdie every three or four holes and off we go. So, I think it's going to be a fascinating week.
No, it is. It's going to be a fascinating week. Listen, lads, I only have this room booked for a month for an hour, so I'm getting the old lights going off in front of me here, exit stage door left. So Gary, thanks a million for joining us this week. Ron and Mark, cheers for joining us as well. Cheers for you for joining in, and hope everyone enjoys the Masters anyway, and thanks as always to Flowgas for the podcast sponsorship. And yeah, we'll be back early next week then with a full recap of the tournament. And talk to you again soon. Thanks.